From KMXD in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. In news this week, landlocked farm salmon hits retail stores. How electronic monitoring works as opposed to using a live human observer. Ocean Beauty is selling its cannery and bunkhouse in Petersburg. That's the one that got hit by the ferry a few years ago. A cool $3.4 million takes it. And Bristol Bay High School students are documenting the history of another cannery, the NN Cannery in Naknek. We'll have those stories and more coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Fish from the first U.S.-based landlocked salmon farms are showing up in grocery stores already. Lainey Welch has the story.
Salmon is now being grown in the nation's first landlocked fish farms in rural Wisconsin. The company called Superior Fresh sent its first batch of fresh 10-pounders to festival food stores across the state. Plans call for an annual output of about 72 tons of Atlantic salmon and steelhead trout from the so-called fish house, which adjoins a large greenhouse, making it the largest aquaponics facility in the world. In the growing system, which uses no pesticides or antibiotics, water that's drawn from two deep wells feeds into a hydroponic setup that produces 20,000 heads of lettuce every day. That water then recirculates back to the fish tanks. The less than 1% of wastewater is used to irrigate alfalfa for hay production. Wisconsinites hail the dual output as the future of environmental-controlled agriculture. Superior Fresh says it's priming the pump for fresh greens and fish to be sold year-round in places where it wouldn't otherwise be possible.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs, 1-800-992-4960. Or online at alaskaboat.com.
Last week, we mentioned that November 1st was the deadline for fishermen to decide whether or not they want to have electronic monitoring on board the vessel. Now, you might be wondering to yourself, what is electronic monitoring? And why would someone voluntarily opt to take cameras on board their boat? Vessel monitoring has been going on for years. Human observers count the number of each species in a haul. They measure, take samples, and do other scientific tracking. It's a way for biologists and policymakers to get hard data about a fishery in order to regulate catches, set limits, and open and close seasons. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's website says that observer data plays a big role in keeping fisheries sustainable.
Basically, it's taking the place of the eyes of the observer, and it doesn't get seasick, doesn't get distracted. And when somebody's doing the review, they can slow down or relook at a fish. You know, it's very, very detailed.
That is Abby Turner-Frankie, who is with the North Pacific Fisheries Association based out of Homer. The concept of getting electronic monitoring, or EM as it's sometimes called, has been around for decades. Its acceptance and usage has been slowly growing, with Alaska at the forefront of getting video monitors on board fishing boats. More recently, the number of fishing boats allowed to take on EM was increased by the North Pacific Fishery Management Council from 145 this year to 165 for 2019. Turner-Frankie says once they get used to them, fishermen hardly notice the cameras, and the equipment is set up based on each boat's configuration and how the crew fishes.
So for pot cod fishing vessels, you're going to have three cameras on board that are watching the deck from multiple angles. An observer that's reviewing that video can tell what's coming on board, how many, what species, They work directly with the crew of the vessels to establish what the best angles are, what the best placement is for their fishing practices. It's very customized to each vessel, so they get pretty great data.
She says when you consider human observers to electronic monitoring, it's not a cut and dry analysis.
I wouldn't put it in terms of better or worse, but it's very different. So human observers are capable of doing things like taking biological samples that a camera can't. However, it also takes an extra bunk to carry a human observer. So having a camera on board is a huge bonus, especially for vessels under, 60 feet.
Alaska Fish Radio reports that all the cost of electronic monitoring is covered by grants from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation. Malcolm Milne, the foundation's president, told Alaska Fish Radio the system is simple to use.
Instead of carrying a human observer, you just turn your cameras on, and they'll record everything coming over the rail. When the set's done, the camera's off, and at the end of your trip, you'll mail in a hard drive, which will be reviewed in Seattle. Once you're used to it, you don't even realize it's there at all.
Electronic monitoring has proved itself to be an effective tool for gathering data that's needed for conserving and regulating many of Alaska's fisheries.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
The Ocean Beauty Seafood Processing Plant and Bunkhouse in Petersburg are for sale. The asking price for those buildings and property owned by the company is just under $3.4 million. Joe Vicnicki has details.
The property is listed with the Carlton Smith Company, a commercial real estate company in Juneau. The processing plant is right between two of Petersburg's three harbors and the waterfront downtown. Back in August, Ocean Beauty President and CEO Mark Palmer informed the Petersburg Borough that the company would be permanently closing the facility. The processor has invested money in its Excursion Inlet plant about 40 miles west of Juneau and is focusing on more fresh and frozen processing instead of canning fish. The company declined to do an interview about putting the Petersburg property up for sale. The property includes 3.25 acres of industrial land. The processing plant has more than 65,000 square feet of building space. A nearby 13,000 square foot bunkhouse on Harbor Way was completed in 1999 and is also for sale. The cannery building site was originally a steamship dock dating back to the early 1900s. It has housed other seafood companies for the good part of the last century and was bought by Chatham Straits Seafoods, a division of Ocean Beauty, in the 1980s. The cannery, one of two in the community, has not operated since 2016. It was also closed in 2010 and in 2012, the year the state ferry Matanuska crashed into the building. That led to the state settling with the company for just under $4 million for the damages. When it was operating, the seafood processing plant employed about 200 seasonal workers. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicnicki.
And now a look at another cannery, a historic cannery in Naknek. The NN Cannery was in operation almost continuously from 1895 until 2015. A history project aims to research and record cannery culture. In early October, 19 students at Bristol Bay High School took part in a digital storytelling workshop to document stories of the people who worked there. KDLG's Izzy Ross has more.
The workshop is called Voices from the Past, Digital Storytelling for the Future. Part of the NN Cannery History Project, its goal is to tell the stories of people involved with the cannery. Each student produced a short video on part of cannery life, interviewing everyone from food cart workers to fishermen. Alicia Osborne explored the mug-up tradition.
When my dad worked at a cannery, I went to the mess hall to eat and sometimes went to mug-up too. It was exciting because there was lots of people.
Well, when we use that term mug-up, everyone knows it means time for coffee or tea. Mom and grandma would say, chai, chayuk, have some tea.
and they'd have breakfast. And then they would work from 8 o'clock until 10 o'clock, and they had a mug-up. About a 15-minute break to have mug-up, and then, of course, they had lunch.
19 community members participated, their interviews interspersed with grainy footage and photographs of cannery workers. As part of the project, students also heard from each other. Here's Nathan Hansen.
My topic is about the fisherman's perspective, and we interview people, and I asked them about how they fished and what they did and what was different back in the day. I liked interviewing my grandpa a lot. I don't know, I just got to know him a little bit more.
The short videos are powerful in part because the students, raised in the industry, are examining their place in it. Carly Eldridge's project looks at women's experiences in the fishery.
I grew up set netting in Naknek, and for the past 2 years, I have subsistence fished with my dad. As a young female in this fishery, I have learned many things I think are important to share with you.
The project builds on a legacy of cultural preservation. It was inspired by Tuktwa, an historical magazine of the Bristol Bay area, which Bristol Bay High School students produced in the 1970s and 80s. Along with Marie Aisma of Sea Stories, Larice Egli assisted the students. She said their work provides a glimpse into part of the fishery that has often been overlooked.
There's almost no record that has been developed in academia that really tells the story of the cannery worker. So that's part of the focus of this project, is to really shine a light on daily cannery life.
And director Katie Ringsmith decided to put $10,000 toward what would become the digital storytelling workshop. The Bristol Bay Economic Development Corporation matched that money.
What we want to reinforce with the students is that their history matters, that they come from a place that has extraordinary history, and it's important not just to Bristol Bay, but to Alaska, as well as the entire nation.
I spoke from an era of sail, wind and sail, into power in 1952.
Women's roles were very limited. You either worked in the mess hall.
About a 15-minute break to have.
These projects, informed by the students' experience growing up around the cannery, contribute to a fuller understanding of the people who worked there. As for Ringsmith and Egli, they are already planning next year's class. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. AMC at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Izzy Ross at KDLG in Dillingham, Joe Vicknicki from KFSK in Petersburg, and Lainey Welch at Alaska Fish Radio. That little bit of music following the electronic monitoring story is by Rockwell. Its title, Somebody's Watching Me. Thanks to everyone who helps put this program together, and a big thank you to Alaska's fishermen who go out in bad weather to bring in the catch. You all be careful out there this fall. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Wall.